Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
And drain cleaning is the name to know.
It's time for Sunday Mass with Christian Arcand on WEEI.
Oh, man. I could watch that play over and over and over again. What a perfect, perfect ricochet. What a great play. What great awareness by Pastrnak. What poor awareness by Mitch Marner, too, by the way. To not only see that Pastrnak was streaking past him. It's okay to pass off your guy to the defenseman, but, you know, there was no way. He had way too much speed, way too much momentum. Those guys were skating backwards, and he was just flying. And that pass couldn't have been more perfect. So good job there. Good job all around, and what a recovery for both Hampus Lindholm and David Pastrnak, two guys that really needed it there. A couple minutes before that, as regulation was ending, this game almost ended very differently, did it not, Nico?
It was pretty close to being a repeat of last year. Pretty close to being the biggest chokers ever.
I almost puked. I'm not even kidding. Like when that happened, when that bounced off of Wertherspoon's skate before in the millisecond, not even. What's smaller than a millisecond? Whatever it is between it hitting the skate and Swayman making the save, when you saw, oh my God, it's getting redirected. Oh my God, okay, he stopped it. That little in between. I almost like vomited. Like I almost voided my bowels at the same time. I couldn't believe what I almost saw. You can't end this way. No, it's not going to end this way. And you know how, like, people say your whole life flashes before your eyes, you know, in a car accident or something, or when the elevator drops a floor, whatever. A lot of turbulence on the plane. All of a sudden, your life flashes before your eye in, like, one split second. Like, that's what happened. It was one split second. But I swear to God, my Bruins fandom life just flat. Like, every single them blowing it against the Flyers and against the Blues and against Chicago and all these things. It all flashed in front of my eyes right in a row. Those last goals, those goals that eliminated them where you're just like, ugh. And you could see it. You could see it in Toronto when Samsonov cleared that puck out. And he just lay there face down on the ice for like 10 minutes. It's just, oh, it's got to be the worst feeling. And that was almost the Bruins. It was this close. It was this close, but Jeremy Swayman, Jeremy bleeping Swayman. Oh, what a legend. What a legend he was in that series. And I'll say it again. It's not just that he's the best goalie in the playoffs right now. He is. He's the best player in the playoffs. Jeremy Swayman. I stand by that. Better than Hyman, better than McDavid, better than McKinnon, better than Verhaeghe. He's definitely better than any goalie. I think he's the best player in the playoffs right now. I don't know if he will be next round. And I don't know how they're going to use him next round, but I have some thoughts. I did this a couple weeks ago with Jones and Mego. I didn't get into the fine details of it, but I looked at the last 10 years of Cup winners and what they did in goal during their playoff run. I'm of the belief that you should go with Swayman unless he asks out, unless he gets injured, or unless he says, I'm just so tired, I need a game off. Which, you know, I mean, they're going every other game, every other night for the next week here, and they just played yesterday, and they're going to be taking on Florida tomorrow. So that could happen. And if it happens, I'm not going to call Swayman soft or say that he needs to be in there for every single game. Blah, 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 none of that. No, no, no. He's still your primary guy, but if he needs a break, he needs a break. That happens sometimes. You'd have to worry about giving a game away or making things easier on the Florida Panthers, but Ullmark this year has been better against the Panthers than Swayman was, and he played him in more of the games, but he was very good against the Panthers the same way that Swayman was very good against the Leafs. So I don't think that'd be the worst thing in the world. I know we disagree, Nico. I don't think it'd be the end of the world if that happened. But anyway, let's just look back at the last 10 years of Stanley Cup winners and what they did. Last year, the Golden Knights, who successfully bullied the Florida Panthers after they bullied everybody else, started Aiden Hill 14 games and Lauren Brossoit for eight. And Hill relieved two of them. So it was 64% Aiden Hill. And he was injured, too. I think he was injured last year, and that's why Brossoit played so much. So if someone's injured, I don't have a problem with that. The year before that, Darcy Kuemper started 16 games for the Avalanche. Francois had four starts. He relieved Kuemper three times. It was 80% Kuemper. But I also remember that Kuemper didn't play great. And the Avalanche just scored a ton of goals, and that's what they ended up doing. But he still played 80% of the games in net. The year before that, Lightning won. Vasilevskiy, 100% of the starts. Year before that, Lightning won again. Vasilevskiy, 100% of the starts. Before that, sorry to bring this up, Bruins fans, but the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup, and Jordan Binnington had 100% of the starts. Jake Allen relieved him one time and didn't make the start. Binnington started every single game. The year before that, 2017-18, Capitals, Braden Holtby. 22 starts for Holtby. Grubauer started two games. That's 92% Holtby. Year before that, 2017 Penguins. This, I'd say, is the closest to a goalie rotation you can say in the last 10 years. 15 starts for Fleury, 10 starts for Murray, which is still 60% Fleury, but that's about as close to an even split as you're going to see on this list. 2016 Penguins, again. And Fleury was on the team, but he only started one game in the playoff run. Murray started 21. Zatkoff had two starts. 88% Murray. Blackhawks, 2015. Crawford, 19 starts. Darling, 4. And then the Kings in 2014. Jonathan Quick started 100% of the starts. Martin Jones subbed in for him two times. So add all those up and divide them by 10. And in the last 10 years, cup winners on average had one goalie make 87% of the starts in the playoffs. 87%. And if you cut away the injuries and the times when it was, you know, not a rotation, but, you know, someone got hurt, then it's probably closer to like 92, 93%. So I understand in the regular season breaking things up and having a rotation and making sure no one gets completely overwhelmed and overworked, but isn't the point of doing that so that someone's fresh for the playoffs? Isn't the whole point of keeping guys, not running them into the ground, not having them go out there every single night and having a rotation like this? Isn't the whole point of that to keep them fresh? So if they're fresh for the playoffs, then what are we talking about? Does Swayman look fresh to you? Does Swayman look like he's tired? I don't think so. I think he looks great. And listen, there's a bunch of 100%ers on that list. Vasilevskiy twice. Binnington. Quick. I don't remember Darling making those starts with the Blackhawks. I only remember Crawford, but I guess he was there too. Whatever. And maybe there was an injury there. I didn't account for every single time someone else made a start. So some of them may have been injuries. I know a bunch of them last year were with Aiden Hill and Brossoit. But I can't tell you the same about all the rest of them. I don't remember. Either way, it's an overwhelming majority. Cup winners in the last 10 years, on average, have one goalie make 87% of the starts. What else do you need to hear? I don't need to hear anything else. And the fact that Ullmark's there and ready to come in and play, I think, is a good thing, if you need him. But if you need him. If you don't need him, I don't need him to be fresh. I don't need him to... I'm not concerned about, you know, not to be mean, but I'm not concerned about his feelings. This isn't about feelings. This is about winning the Stanley Cup. This is about getting out of the second round. This is about beating the Florida Panthers. And how do you do that? How do you beat the Florida Panthers? It's a good question, because the only team that could do it last year did it by beating them up. And I hate to tell you, Bruins, but you're not the Golden Knights. You are better than them, I think, this year, at the very least. They got knocked out by Dallas, so you're still alive and they aren't. But in terms of your style of play, in terms of intimidation, in terms of being able to take a punch and give one back, you don't play like that. And Florida does. And it's going to be very interesting to see how they try and counteract that, how they try and counterbalance it. Because a lot of things that Toronto did in this past series here worked. A lot of things that they did to slow down Marchand worked. It was really one thing, and that was Bertuzzi. Send Bertuzzi out there, have him muck it up with Marchand every single shift, and that's what's going to happen. And Marchand was frustrated. You could see it. He was frustrated after the first couple games. You could see him afterwards talking to the media and sort of this whole, I don't know what's going on here, look on his face. It was just him and Bertuzzi going at it over and over and over again. Then he had that whole fight with the ref and everything, and it's just, you could tell he wasn't able to play his game. David Pastrnak, not able to play his game. And I thought, did you see that hit Edmondson put on him in the first period last night?
Yeah, he got smoked. Got to keep your head up there.
Head on a swivel there, Pasta. Because I'll tell you what, Florida, I bet you Florida watched that and said, all right, we're all going to do one of those. We're all going to get him like that. Every single one. I want every single person on this team to hit Pastrnak like that in this next round. They're going to be going right for him. They're going to be going right for Brad Marchand. And they're going to be going right for these defensemen, too, who also proved to be very leaky, very kind of not strong on the puck, unstable in their own end. It was a lot of ugly hockey that was played by the Bruins in this series. The one thing that was consistently good, that was consistently great, was Jeremy Swayman. Can he beat Tim Thomas? Can he keep this up? Can he keep doing it? It's a good question. No one thought Tim Thomas could beat Tim Thomas until he started being Tim Thomas in those playoffs. No one expected Tim Thomas. He didn't come here advertised as some Patrick Waugh, Dominic Hasek, Ed Belfour is going to save your season and win you a Stanley Cup. That was not what Tim Thomas was expected to be when he was brought in. And when he won that cup, people looked at it sort of the same way I think people look at Binnington now. It's like, wow, he really got hot in those playoffs. But he wasn't ever some great goalie. And listen, Thomas had a good career, not a great one. And certainly had a late start in his career. But you don't need to have a great career. You just need to have one great playoff run. And Jeremy Swayman's young enough that he could still have a very good career, great career, sure. But I think at this point, we know enough about Ullmark. This is the point Nico was making a few minutes ago, was that despite this great record that Ullmark has against Florida this season, despite that, Ullmark is not a proven playoff performer. And that's true. I mean, you're right about that, Nico. He's not. He's proven the opposite. But in a situation like this, I just read you this list of all these other teams. Other guys made starts on a lot of those teams. Not many of them. And Ullmark's already made one start. But, I mean, you know, there's plenty of instances where Holtby made 22, Grubauer made 2. And I don't think that Ullmark needed to make a start in this past series. I don't think that was necessary. I think that was just something they wanted to do just to see where everybody was at. It was sort of like a little heat check there. And when it didn't work out, then they went back to Swayman and they stuck with him. And then they tried to pretend like that was the plan all along. Oh, yeah, we just wanted to see who had the hot hand. It's like, no, you saw who had the hot hand. Jeremy Swayman had the hot hand. He was great in game one. He should have just kept playing. But either way, whatever you think about all that, they didn't need to put Ullmark in. If they need to put him in, they should. If they don't, I'm fine with sticking with Swayman for the rest of this. I'm fine with it being his crease. I don't think that there's any reason to go away from that unless he gives you a reason. And that's sort of the thing. That's why I've been so pro-Swayman all this time. I've been pro-Swayman for a couple years now. It goes back a couple of years here with me. It goes all the way back to that Islander series where Tuukka Rask tore his groin, basically, and they insisted on putting him out there in Game 6 against the Islanders instead of Swayman, and, of course, they lost. The Ullmark series against Carolina was another one. First two games, it was not going well for Ullmark. They put in Swayman, and he goes 3-2. And then, of course, last year, Ullmark was the Vezina winner last year, so I'm not going to go too crazy about last year. But if I'm Jeremy Swayman, I think, you know, I've been sitting waiting in the wings, waiting for my turn here. And last year, Vezina or not, Ullmark was hurt going into that playoff run. He was. I was at the game he got hurt at. And, you know, like, it's like a familiar refrain. Okay, you're going to just keep going with the injured guy instead of me. If I'm Swayman, you're going to just keep going with these injured guys instead of me. Well, how's that working out? Oh, not great? Oh, really? We're not winning with the guy who tore his groin off the bone? Oh, we're not winning with the guy who, I forget what his injury was last year, but, you know, we're not going to go with that guy who got hurt at the end of the season? Oh, weird. Maybe we should start with me. Maybe we should start with me and stick with me. And I said this after game two. I said, if they stick with the rotation and they don't give it back to Jeremy Swayman, if I'm Jeremy Swayman, I'm demanding a trade. I'm demanding a trade in the offseason, which I'm not even sure he can do because I think he's a restricted free agent. But whatever, you know what I mean. I'm out. I'm out of here. I'm not negotiating with you. I'm taking every offer sheet that comes into my inbox. I'm taking every single one of them, and you can match them all. All right? I'm not playing the game with you. If you're gonna prove to me over and over that you don't believe in me, if you're going to say to me over and over again, Jeremy, we like you, but we're going to go with this guy. We like you, but we're going to go with the injured guy. We like you, but we're going to go with the rotation this year. We're just never, ever, ever going to trust you with the keys to this car. I would want to go somewhere where they did if I was Jeremy Swayman. I think at this point he's proven he deserves it. I think at this point that's over. But there was a time, a long time, where it seemed like this team just did not believe in him. And I think that they're late to this party. I think they're very late to the game, and they should have put their belief in Jeremy Swayman earlier than this. I think he is proving now he's ready for it, and I think he would have been ready for it last year too. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. We'll talk about the Florida series with your phone call.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Calls right after this.
Sunday Mass continues right now with Christian Arcand on WEEI.
Deep. Kachuk. Brandon Carlo on him. Verhaeghe wins the series for Florida. And this joyride ends in a Hindenburg-like ending. The Bruins are the second record-setting team in a row to drop the series in the first round.
Got to pay back. That's
how last season ended. Hearing Jack make that call, by the way, I was thinking about this last night. I feel bad for Jack, not because he's retiring or, you know, because of the voice problems or anything. I feel bad for that, too, obviously. But what I really feel bad about is that he didn't get to make that call on that Pastrnak goal last night. That should have been the call that Jack Edwards got to go out on. That should have been it. Not that BS goal, that Morgan Geeky goal at the end of the game. It didn't even matter. Well, it was very important since Wall got hurt on that play. But that didn't matter. Like that, for Jack to go out on that game, on that goal, on that play, for that to be his last call, instead of that Pastrnak play. And listen, McDonough does a great job. I thought McDonough and Ferraro were terrific last night. I thought they were both very good. I think McDonough's one of the best, and I thought Ferraro is one of the best color commentators. I thought they did a great job with that game. I had no complaints about the commentary whatsoever, play-by-play or color commentary. But I did really, really wish that Jack got to make that call. That would have been, listen, you know, it's very rare you get to go out on your own terms. It's very rare you get to go out on a great play. It's very rare you get to have, like, a storybook ending. Only a couple people ever got to do it. Peyton Manning was one of them. He got to win the Super Bowl and ride off into the sunset. No one else gets to do that. It's very, very – Tom Brady didn't even get to do that. I guess he could have, but he didn't want to. You understand the point, is that life's not fair. And I felt bad. I felt bad that Jack didn't get to make that call. The Florida Panthers, which, by the way, before we go any further here, I address this in trending. I don't know why I thought that Dallas beat Vegas. I thought that they beat them in Game 6. I guess not. I stopped watching that game. I thought that they won. But they did not. Game 7 of that series is tonight. There's also other hockey tonight, or today, I should say, at 4 o'clock. The Rangers and the Hurricanes start their series. So there you go. You got a Game 7, and you got the beginning of what I think is going to be a great series. I think Rangers and Carolina is going to be a great series. I'm looking forward to that one. But, yeah, that Game 7 with Dallas and Vegas is tonight, so it doesn't really change the point of what I was trying to say, which is that the Vegas Golden Knights are bigger and tougher than the Florida Panthers and the Bruins, for that matter, and they were last year, and that's why they beat them, and that's sort of the point I was trying to make there. But they are still very much alive, as are the Bruins, and we'll see how that ends up going tonight. Either way, I think the point still stands there. You want to do something, Nico? You want to do a quick exercise? I know you're eating your salad, but you want to do a quick exercise with me here?
Sure.
You want to draft a series?
Okay, let's do it.
All right, you have the first pick. Who are you taking? Or do you want me to go first?
Jeremy Swayman, pick number one.
Pick number one, okay. That's fair. I probably would have taken him, too. I'd go with Tkachuk for my first pick.
Okay, if that's the case, I would probably go Marchand that, too.
Marchand, too?
For my, well, third overall, I guess.
You take Marchand ahead of Barkov and Reinert and...
Yep.
For Hagee and all
I really
guys?
Trust in Marchand's playoff experience, and I think he's going to have to be the guy to step up here. This is the type of series where Bergeron would step up and carry the Bruins. I think Marchand has to do it because the real one-on-one battle here, he's no longer facing Tyler Bertuzzi. It's going to be Matthew Tkachuk. That's what I'm going to be watching. Those guys are going to be lined up every single time they're out there together. Marchand has to win that one-on-one.
I don't know if I would take, like, going into the series, I don't know if I'd have taken him second, but I'll take Verhaeghe just because he's so hot right now. So I know I got two Panthers here, but you took the two Bruins I would have taken. Or you took the one Bruin I would have taken for sure. Oh, wait, no, you didn't say Pastrnak. I'll take Pastrnak here because you said Marchand, right? You said
yes.
Swayman and Marchand. All right, I'll have Tkachuk and Pastrnak. Your turn.
I'll take Verhaeghe just because of what he's done against the Bruins in the past.
Okay. I think then I'll take Ekblad. I just don't feel great about the way McAvoy's playing, and Ekblad's about as good of a two-way defenseman as they have over there in Florida. I think he's probably their best defenseman. You could say Montour maybe, or Forsling is good too, but I'd say Ekblad would be the guy I'd pick.
McAvoy isn't playing well right now, but I feel like I'm in a position where I have to take him. And this season, I did think he played pretty well against the Panthers. They certainly brought out a bit more of a spark and a bit more of fight in McAvoy and the Bruins, so I think this is a series for him to bounce back. I think he also fares well against teams that muck up a little more and have a little less speed.
Could be. Okay. I'll take Barkov, I guess, then.
I would go with Carlo. I thought outside of that one play he made, the mistake in Game 7, Carlo was the best defenseman in the series for the Bruins. I would have felt awful for him because that would have been the play that went down and got remembered from his series if the Bruins lost that game. But games 1-6, he was easily their best defenseman, and they're going to need him to have a series here.
Yeah, probably. I think next I'd probably go Bobrovsky. just because he's, you know, he's their guy, he's a Vezina finalist, and I don't want you to get both goalies, so I'll take Bobrovsky.
Fair enough. Did you already take Reinhardt, right?
I did not. I mentioned him, but I didn't take him.
Okay, now I'll take him here.
Reinhardt for you? Okay, I'll probably go then, like, Tarasenko, maybe? Or shouldn't Montour? I'll go Montour. I'll take Montour.
Okay, I'll actually take Jake DeBrusk here. I think Jake DeBrusk will have a good series. He started off hot against the Leafs. I thought he was really good in Game 6, despite not getting on the score sheet. I think this is a guy who's putting in the effort, and he's another guy that will have to step up because we know Pastrnak and Marchand will draw so much attention.
All right, we can stop it right there. I'd say you're much more bullish on the Bruins than I am. Going with Marchand early on there, I was surprised by. But I think that, you know, you look down at these rosters, and if you base it on, like, the rosters and going into the season, how good these guys are, what you think about them, it's different than, I guess, going by who's playing well right now. But if it's that, Florida just took out Tampa Bay, you know? I mean, you beat Toronto in 7 games. Toronto, who always loses in the playoffs. Tampa Bay, that's a team that surprises people in the playoffs usually. That's a team that has a very good goalie and some high-powered scoring, and it seemed like Florida made quick work of them. So I'd say that they both have the momentum going. Florida has a little bit more of a break, maybe a little bit more time to recharge. But the Bruins are riding the momentum of the adrenaline and everything from that Game 7 win. So I don't know. It could be one of those unstoppable force, movable object situations.
The problem with the Bruins is, if you notice, neither of us picked any of their centers. They suck down the middle. Can't win faceoffs. Zacha and Coyle are net nothing out there right now. This is the issue. Usually, teams, when they focus on Pastrnak and Marchand, still had to worry about Bergeron. Nobody is game planning for Charlie Coyle. He gave them absolutely nothing in that series. Pavel Zacha hasn't scored a playoff goal in what now? 25 games or something like that, I think they said on the broadcast. It's poor. I don't know how you fix that problem at center without those two guys stepping up. There's no one you're plugging into the lineup to fix this. Matt Patra's not coming back this season. They're kind of screwed. If Coyle doesn't step up, they're not going anywhere.
Yeah, and, you know, Barkov's he's a bear over on that other side. You know, I don't love, like, Lindell and Stenlund and some of those other centers that they have, but, you know, Barkov out there, he's gonna give you all he can handle for sure. So there you go. There's our quick drafting of the two teams here. If you're gonna go down the line and decide which team you think has a better shot, I think that the Bruins and the Panthers deserve to be playing each other. They were going back and forth over the course of the season for the top seed in the Atlantic. Panthers ended up getting it, and I think that worked out. You know, I think that worked out well for the Bruins. I don't know that the Bruins could have played like they played this past series and beaten the Lightning. I just don't think that that's something that you could have counted on. You can count on it with Toronto because Toronto comes up small in those games. Tampa came up small against Florida. It's not like they didn't. But I think that would have been a tougher matchup for the Bruins. I think they would have had a harder time. I don't know if I'd say the same about Florida and Toronto if they played each other. I still think Florida probably would have handled Toronto, but I don't know. I mean, we'll see. Can the Bruins put up a fight against these Panthers? Are the Bruins going to be tired from their 7-game series? Are they going to be a little spent? I'd say this. You just mentioned the centers on the Bruins. Zacha, Coyle, Geeky to a lesser extent. Beecher played center for just taking faceoffs. And I know they moved some of those guys around, but I think in general, you know, you know who these guys are. And you know what they've been doing and not doing. If they can't get something going here, and not just, you know, in 5-on-5, I'm talking like in power play and everything else. The Bruins' power play last night, they had one power play where it didn't seem like they were on a power play. There's one where it seemed like they were on the penalty kill. Every single time they made a pass anywhere, you had someone from the Leafs putting pressure on the puck, you had someone in a passing lane, and you had a Bruin there at the point or wherever they were just not knowing where to go with it, not knowing who to pass to, not having any idea of how to set up their offense and, you know, go cross ice and cross crease and all that stuff. They just had no – it was like they never played together before. It was like a bunch of guys in a beer league all just, you know, joining a team and playing for 10 minutes. It was strikingly bad, and I feel like if that's bad against – if it's bad like that against Toronto, what's it going to look like against the Florida Panthers team that's a lot more physical?
Oh, it's going to look a lot worse. I think McAvoy killed him on the power play.
Yeah.
A couple weeks ago, Jim Montgomery was talking about towards the end of the season, Charlie McAvoy needed to have that shot mentality, and I think he lost that. There were a couple times he was just force-feeding the puck to Pasta when he was covered. Like, the Bruins rely a little too much on that David Pastrnak one-timer, and I didn't realize this. I knew it felt like a long time since Pastrnak scored a goal. I think they said it's been 25 games since he's had a power play goal, and he has one power play goal, and I want to say his last, like, 30-something games. It's been quite a while since Pastrnak has been scoring on the power play. The Bruins need to turn it around somehow. I think Mason Lorai on the blue line in the power play may be a solution, although you can't put him and Pastrnak both out there at the same time because I think Lorai takes a lot of risk, and you don't want him turning a puck over right at the blue line. He needs to be out there with someone like Shattenkirk just in case he needs a little cover there.
Yeah, I'd buy that. Lorai, I thought, and you, I know you agree with this, Nico, was one of the better players that they had in the series.
I thought last night was maybe his best game as a Bruin. He was terrific.
He was good. He played well. I'm glad that he got another game in and wasn't just remembered for getting his face smashed into the boards in game six there, because that was unfortunate. All in all, though, I'd say, this Bruins power play. You got two, I don't want to say gifts. I thought the tripping against Van Riemsdyk was one that could have been, they could have gone looked the other way on that one. The hooking against Pastrnak, that was in sort of a stretch. Remember in the second period, that's when all three of the penalties were, I think, were all in the second period.
That one was soft, but it came after the soft call against
Coyle. It came after
Coyle.
The Coyle one. I thought
the JVR one was a little more legitimate, and then I felt the other two were really soft.
Yeah, okay, that's right. So Van Riemsdyk was the first one, and I remember thinking, like, okay, they didn't call anything in the first period. There was a couple of, like, tough hits, and a couple guys went down, but they didn't call anything. Now they're calling this, and then there was the Coyle one, which was, like, a couple minutes later, and it's just like, oh, no. Oh, is it going to be like this for the rest of the game? Are they just going to be giving power plays back and forth here? Is it going to be one of these type of games? And I was worried about that because the Bruins' power plays look like ass. I know they haven't gotten a lot, but they just, you know, they look completely hopeless out there on the power play. And I thought they did in that second period. I thought they generated the very few scoring chances, and most of the time it seemed like they were on their heels and getting pressured in ways that you shouldn't be getting panicky turnovers on your own power play. Just, you know, like in Toronto, they're not a bad penalty killing team. They haven't had much to do lately, but it's like they're not a bad penalty killing team, but they're not that good. They're not that good that they can be everywhere in every passing lane and pressuring the puck and nobody's open. Like that was frustrating. It was frustrating to watch that, and that's something that they absolutely have to be better at. They have to have Zacha and Coyle step up. The D-men all have to step up in a lot of different ways, and I'm just, I don't know. It seems like if they don't, that the Bruins don't have a great chance in this series. At least that's sort of my instinct going into it. But then I remember that the Panthers don't have the hottest goalie in the league. The Bruins do. And that, to me, is kind of the trump card, isn't it? When you have that, when you have the best goalie in the playoffs, the best player in the playoffs, in your goal, some of those other things don't get erased, but aren't as important. They're not as vital. It's not like, oh, well, you know, they're losing all these faceoffs. Oh, well, the power play is not very strong. Oh, these little secondary things aren't going great. If you have the best goalie, like head and shoulders the best goalie, which I think Swayman is, maybe not head and shoulders, but he's definitely the best. There's other guys playing well. Shesterkin's playing well. Aiden Hill's playing well. Bobrovsky's got four wins. You know what I mean? Like there's other guys who are certainly playing well enough, but not as good as Swayman. Statistically, just there isn't. And I think that when you're able to fall back on that, and when I say fall back, I don't mean like don't play. That's all right. We don't have to win. We'll let Swayman win the game for us. But when you know that you have that guy back there, and you know that he's playing at this level, I think that in general, that can elevate the rest of the team. That can elevate everybody else. Well, it's not the end of the world if we don't complete this pass. It's not the end of the world if this happens. It's okay because we know we got our guy back there. But I think they went to that well a few too many times in this last series. You know, I watched way too many breakouts stall out in between the circles. Or, before the blue line even. Before they got into the neutrals. I saw way too many of those completely fizzle out and turn into turnovers to feel confident against a team who pinches on you like the Panthers do. It just seems like that's going to be a real recipe for disaster. And now here is where someone like Jim Montgomery can prove to everybody, hey, I'm a guy you can trust. You can put your faith in me. I know what I'm doing. I'm ready to make adjustments. I'm ready to go out there and take another crack at this Florida Panthers team. What sort of adjustments is he going to make? Some might say the adjustments he made in this last series don't give you a lot of confidence. I might be one of those people. I didn't love the way Montgomery handled this past series. I didn't. I thought that he made a lot of unnecessary moves. It was almost like, I said this during the week, it was almost like he wanted to do the goalie rotation, and then when he realized he couldn't, they told him, no, Jim, we're not doing that. Just leave Swayman out there. And he's like, fine, I'm going to rotate everybody else then. I'm going to rotate my fourth line. I'm going to rotate my bottom D pair. I'm going to rotate all these other people, and that's what I'm going to do since you won't let me do the goalie rotation. And it didn't work. I mean, I thought a lot of those times, after game two, some of those adjustments were fine. After game four, it was like, well, what are you doing? stop dinking around with everything. You got a system that's working right now. You don't have to keep tinkering here. You don't have to try and fix something that's not broken. And in general, I'd say that there's aspects of the Bruins roster and the way that they've been playing that you can look at and say isn't running perfectly right now. Is it broken? I don't know. I don't know if I'd go that far to call it broken, but you can say it's not operating at peak performance. And I think you need to be operating at peak performance if you want to really have a chance in the playoffs against Tkachuk and Ekblad and the rest of these guys in the Florida Panthers, because they're tough. I mean, they're a tough team. They were in the Cup Finals last year, and they took everybody by surprise. No one's surprised by them this year. All right, they went into this with a target on their back, and they still were able to win the Atlantic. All right, and they overtook you. And I know that part of it was maybe the Bruins taking their foot off the gas so they get Toronto in the first round, which I was all for, by the way. I was all for them doing that. I had no problem with that at all. But now it's time to pay the bill. Here come the Florida Panthers, and you're going down there tomorrow. 617-779-7937. There's your phone number. Quick break. We'll be right back.
If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through, you deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame,
two more.
You deserve this ice cold reward. Modelo, the markable fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
We get it. Attention spans just aren't what they used to be. Heads in social media and eyes on Netflix. But what do people do with their ears? Well, for one, they're listening to audio. Americans spend 4.4 hours with audio every day. Oh, and you want the proof? Well, you just sat through this ad that's now approaching 30 seconds. What could you say to a potential customer in 30 seconds? Let Odyssey put together a media plan tailor-made for your unique marketing needs. Advertise with Odyssey. Visit ads.odyssey.com.
Now, broadcasting from the pulpit of Sports Radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcan on WEEI.
Brad Marchand, Brad, another Game 7 against Toronto you come out on the right side of. How did you do it this time?
Disbelief. We believed in our group all year, and that didn't change. Shaddy gave us a hell of a speech last night about how to believe in our group and play for each other, and we did that today.
I know you did not want to think about last year, but, man, it seemed harder and harder to ignore as this wore on. How would you describe the relief?
Yeah, it did. I mean, especially with how much it was talked about. But, we really tried, not just right now, but all year to stay in the moment, and we did a really good job at that. No matter what happened, they're a hell of a team. We knew they were going to push, and they did. They played a hell of a series, but it's good to stay in the moment there.
Your coach said this morning he was at ease walking in, seeing a big smile on David Pastrnak's face. What was your sense of him today?
Yeah, he played a hell of a game today, and all morning he was dialed in. And, from the time we got to the hotel last night, you knew that he was going to have a big game today, and he did. He showed up.
Congratulations. See you in Florida.
Thank you.
Brad Marchand after the game. Catch that in the very beginning there. If you haven't, you didn't watch really anything or haven't been on the internet much today. Can you just give me the very beginning, what he said in the very beginning there, Nico? What the message was?
Brad Marchand, Brad, another Game 7 against Toronto you come out on the right side of. How did you do it this time?
Just belief.
Belief. I mean, we know Brad Marchand well enough at this point, don't we? I mean, I never met the guy personally. Actually, that's not true. I have met him before. I have met Brad Marchand like once or twice. We didn't, like, hang out or anything, but, like, I did meet the guy. I wouldn't say I know him. But I think even if you haven't met him or you don't hang out or whatever, we all know what Brad Marchand was saying there. That was nice. Belief. I'd put that up there with Brady screaming out Roger that after they won the Super Bowl in 2016. After Deflategate, I guess that was. A big Roger that right in Roger's face. That was pretty good. Belief is not the same. It's not on that same level. I mean, it's a good little shot at the Leafs, I guess, but it wasn't quite Roger that. I saw people saying, oh, this is like when Brady said Roger that. It was kind of like that in like the double entendre sense, but it didn't have the same impact. First of all, win the cup and then start, you know, and then you can have like a lasting memory, all that stuff. You win the first round. A first round series against Toronto doesn't have the same type of gravitas. But I enjoyed that. I enjoyed that little bit of needling there. And I'll tell you what. I don't know why they skipped out on this. I watched the game on ABC because you had to, because NESN didn't have the rights. It was ABC exclusive. And unless I missed it, and I might have, Nico, did they show Maple Leaf Square at all at the end of that game?
Those cowards did not show it.
Not once?
Not that I saw.
Not one time. Why do we watch sports? Why do we watch Game 7s if not for the drama and the pain and the hurt and the reaction of the team that loses and the elation and the happiness of the teams that win? March Madness, what do they do when it looks like a team's about to lose? They zoom in on the bench and they find the kid who's crying the hardest and they zoom right in on him, sobbing and blubbering. And then they move over and they find some girl playing the flute and she's crying too. And they show everybody crying and it's great television because that's what sports are about. It's about crying. That's what I'm serious. It's about emotion. It's about stuff like that. ABC, you couldn't put one camera on those people. You couldn't show me those Toronto Maple Leafs fans who have got to be in hell by now, by the way. I mean, seriously, every year it's the same thing. They must wake up and just think they're in hell whenever the playoffs start. This is what hell is. We all gather into this little square here in Toronto and we all wear our jerseys and we all watch on that big screen. And then we all get upset when they lose, and that happens every single year. It's like it's hell. I'm serious. I think that's what, for big-time hockey fans, I think that's what hell's like. You know, if you're a Leafs fan, it's just going to be like what it was like when you were alive. It's just a repeat of your daily life is what hell is. This is coming from a reverend, too, by the way, here on the Sunday Mass. I think it was an unforgivable sin for ABC and ESPN not to show us those crying Canadians. I wanted to see them. Everybody wanted to see them. What do you think of when you think of Bergeron, Bergeron, Bergeron? I think of crying Canadians. I think of those people in Maple Leaf Square, that one guy holding his hat in between the other two guys, eyes clogged, silent scream that you can't hear, but you can hear it. That's what I think of. Bergeron, obviously, I think of Bergeron's goal and everything, but immediately after, because that whole game, they had been showing Maple Leaf Square when they were up 4-1. They kept showing it. And everybody high-fiving and hugging each other and popping champagne. Oh, yeah, greatest thing in the world. And then when they showed him at the end of it, oh, it was beautiful. And ABC said, nope, we're going to take the high road. We're not gonna savor the tears of these sad Torontons. What do you call it? What do you call people from Toronto? Torontons? Whatever you call them, people from Toronto. We're just gonna stick to the celebration in Boston, which is fine because that's the other half of it too. You got to show people celebrating, you got to show the happy winners and everything. But when you have that many fans of a team all gathered in a public space, basically begging to have their reaction broadcast to what happens in this Game 7, and you don't broadcast it, what the hell, man? What the hell? I really wanted to see that. I think that it would have been better than what they had. I don't remember exactly what happened after the game. I remember they interviewed Pasternak on the ice. There was the Marchand with TSN. I remember, you know, some interviews here and there. Some of them I saw on Twitter. But ABC didn't show the Toronto fans, which I think was a big mistake. Big mistake. You've got to show that. You've got to do that. This next series, by the way, with the Florida Panthers. I went through this a little while ago. But while I'm giving the net to Jeremy Swayman until he shows me any kind of reason why he shouldn't have it anymore, Linus Allmark against Florida this season was good. He was very good. I would say that it wasn't quite as good as Swayman against Toronto, but it's in the ballpark. Allmark played, I think, 3 of the 4 games against Florida. They won all 4. And the 3 games that he played, he had better numbers than the Swayman game. Swayman's game, they won, I think, 4-3. And Swayman gave up 3 goals on 21 shots. So, you know, which isn't to say I would take the net away from Swayman here and give it to Allmark. But I do think that in the event that Swayman gets nicked up, in the event that Swayman tells Montgomery, listen, I'm really tired after that 7-game series, I need a night, I wouldn't be devastated to see Linus Allmark at some point in the series. I wouldn't be. I would have been devastated to see him again in that last series after game 2. I didn't even want to see him in game 2. I didn't want to see him at all in that last series. And I think that it's still Swayman's crease until he gives it up, or there's some reason why it seems like, okay, there's clearly something going on with him, or he has 2 bad games in a row, whatever it is. Whatever imaginary line of demarcation that you have to pull Jeremy Swayman, whatever that may be for you or for me or for anybody else, if Allmark has to play, only if he has to, I'm okay with it. I don't know. I don't know how you look past, and I'm only saying this because I was very vocal about this when it came to the Swayman and Toronto thing. He was so good against Toronto in the regular season that I thought putting anybody else out there is just a mistake. He's in Toronto's head. Is Linus Allmark in the head of the Florida Panthers? I'd say probably not. I don't know if anybody on the Bruins is really in their head like that. They don't have the history that the Bruins have with the Maple Leafs. They haven't beat them every single playoff series going back 75 years or whatever. When was the last time the Toronto beat them? In like the 50s? You know, back when like Elvis was topping the charts. Like, okay, that's different, I think, than what's going on here with Florida. Allmark played some good games against Florida this year. And in general, I think that the Bruins played the Panthers very well. But you have a playoff series last year to look back on and reflect on and remember, oh, yeah, these guys are a handful. These guys are going to give you everything you can handle. And these guys aren't afraid of you either. There is no fear in the Florida Panthers dojo, that's for sure. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. And guess what, folks? We got a little bonus baseball for you here. Normally, I'd be signing off right now. I'd be telling you Mass has ended, go in peace, and you'd be all going out to your cars, going back home, doing whatever you're doing. But today, we got day baseball starting at 1:10 with the Mass Mutual pregame show and Joe Weil. So I'll be back, and we'll do an extra 10 minutes. 617-779-7937. If there's anything else you want to say about the Bruins before we get to Red Sox baseball, now is the time. So once again, 617-779-7937. Call in, and we'll get to as many Bruins phone calls as we can here before we hand things off to Joe Weil and Red Sox baseball, Sox and Twins out in Minnesota. So, yeah, let's load up the phone lines. I'll be back right after this, and we'll wrap things up in just a moment.
Now, broadcasting from the pulpit of Sports Radio in Boston, it's Sunday Mass with Christian Arcan on WEEI.
All right, like I said, a little bonus baseball for you here. A couple minutes before I hand things off to Joe Weil and we get over to Minnesota for the Red Sox and the Twins. Red Sox looking to avoid a sweep here at the hands of the Twinkies, who are just red hot right now. That 10-game win streak was no fluke. They are really playing some good baseball. Be nice to see the Red Sox escape with at least one win in this one. But in the meantime, it's your last chance to talk Bruins, at least until the game is over. At 617-779-7937. But before I get to your calls, I just wanted to read this one text because it's very dramatic. Texter in the 413 starts it off by saying, sad. It's an ex-president, maybe. Sad. You really think that Marchand was needling the Leafs? You are pathetic. Wrong read again. No need for manufactured drama. Just enjoy the win. There was no additional shot at the Leafs. Do better. You're a disgrace. First of all, that sounds like Pete Shepard. Ah, you're a disgrace. That's what Pete used to say. Whenever Pete Shepard was really mad about someone or something, he'd go to disgrace. And that when he said that, you knew he really meant it. Joe Kerrigan is a disgrace. That's what Pete used to say. But just real quick, you don't think that Brad Marchand saying beat Leaf was a shot at the Maple Leafs? You stupid idiot. Did you not hear Paul Bissonnette the entire series saying you got to beat Leaf the entire time? That was their rallying cry, you moron. That's exactly what he was doing. That is 100% what Brad Marchand is doing. And that is the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but. Oh, you're a disgrace. Manufactured drama. That's what he was doing, you moron. You don't think him saying "be Leaf" was a shot at the Leafs and Paul Bissonnette and all the Toronto fans and everybody else who had been saying "be Leaf," hashtag "be Leaf" the whole series? Oh, my God. That may have just been an active troll, someone trying to get me to react, but it worked. It worked. I reacted. Now, that's exactly what Brad Marchand was doing, 413, you numbnuts. Anyways, 617-779-7937 is the phone number. I don't often scream at the text line, but I felt like it was necessary right there. Frank is in Marshfield. He has a thought on David Pastrnak and Jim Montgomery. Go ahead, Frank.
Yes, how you doing, Reverend?
Great.
I find it a breath of fresh air. I'm probably an old, and I like a coach that calls out a player, mm-hmm. a player that faces it, pregame interview on the ice, yep. accepts the challenge, and then goes out and delivers. You know, especially in this time of sports where, you know, the Gerard Mayo, you got to coddle him, you got to like him first, and then this and that. I'm old school, and that was refreshing. A coach motivates players however he has to do it. And I found it refreshing, and I'm glad the way Pastrnak handled it, and the results obviously were great.
Yeah, they certainly were, Frank. Thanks for the call. And I agree with you. I agree with you 100%. I thought that was handled well by Montgomery. I think that Pastrnak deserved to get called out, and I loved the way Pasta handled it, too. I was a little worried about that. I was a little worried about that because you remember the last guy, Butch Cassidy, who I liked and I think, you know, proved that he's got the chops to be a very good coach in the NHL by winning the Stanley Cup last year and then bringing it down to the Cape and just rubbing it in everyone's face, which if I was him, I would have done the same damn thing. Exact same thing. I probably would have been more obnoxious about it. I've been like, hey, you remember when the Bruins won the cup and you saw Chara walking around the North End with the cup in like a baby stroller? I would have been doing that all up and down Mass Ave. You would have seen me in every neighborhood with that thing. Hey, look at this. Remember me? I would have been insufferable if that was me. No question about it. But yeah, I think that, you know, you look back at him and the way things sort of went with DeBrusk and some of these other younger players. Cassidy was certainly never hesitant to call anybody out. He called Tuca out all the time, and they didn't like it. The team didn't like it. They didn't like his methods. They didn't like his style. They didn't win with him, so they sort of figured, you know, what the hell do you know, maybe, and they tuned him out, and I think that's why the separation happened the way it did, and I think that in the long term, it was probably the wrong move. Now, sometimes, even if it's a good coach, it's the wrong situation, then you have to move on. But I think that the players could have probably toughened up a little bit about that. You know, Cassidy's clearly a good coach. He coached a lot of them in the AHL. And I thought that that was all handled sort of strangely. You know, let's all sack up a little bit here instead of being mad at the, you know, mean coach who's being mean to us and being mean to Tukes and being mean to everybody. Like, you know, if you win, then people aren't mean to you. That's generally how that works. Let's go to Southie. Talk to Mike. What's up, Mike?
Hey, first-time caller, long-time listener here. And, look, I agree with your take on Swayman. I think I'm a big believer in you have to be able to ride the hot goalie, and we certainly have one in Swayman right now. But I don't want Monty to be nervous about a tough fan base here and making the switch. I think Omark has a lot to prove against the Panthers. He was dealing with an injury last year. And, you know, yeah, maybe you start Sway, but I think Omark, game one, you might catapult the team and give us some extra juice against the hot Panthers team here.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I disagree. I hear you, and you're not the only person to say that. Steve Conroy tweeted it. I saw DJ Bean tweet that he'd go with Allmark in game one. And I'm a huge fan of DJ Bean and his podcast and all that, but I disagree with them. I just do. I think they're wrong. I know it was a tough series. I know that it was a late game, and I know that they have a quick turnaround and they got to play again tomorrow night. I did not see any reason. I did not see any reason to believe that Jeremy Swayman is slowing down, or that he's tired, or that he's overwhelmed, or that he needs a break, or any of the other things. These are all things people are projecting onto him. He's been pretty clear, I think, about how he feels and how it's all going, and that he wants the net and he wants to be out there. He said that three different times in the last series. After wins, after losses, after all Mark played, after everything. Swayman said, I want the net. He's young. He's 25. He should have it. He should be there. And, you know, if you need to go to Allmark, that's a nice option to have. But I'm sticking with Swayman until I have some reason not to, and I don't have a reason not to yet. And there you go. That is the end of my sermon. Mass is ended. Go in peace. Stay tuned. Joe Weil's coming up next. He will get you ready for the Red Sox and the Twins as the Sox look to avoid a sweep here. That's coming up next right here on Boston Sports Original, WEEI.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, and so is MLB.tv. Watch every out-of-market, regular season game on your favorite streaming devices. Anywhere, anytime, all season long. Follow the action live or on demand. Track four games at once with multi-view mode and catch up with in-game highlights. Plus, original programs, minor league broadcasts, and local pre- and post-game shows. Go to MLB.tv to start your free trial today. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.